Welcome to another episode of Herzl's Condo Chronicles. I'm Rita Khan, Director of Marketing.
And I'm Kevin Herzl, the Managing Member here at Herzl Law.
In today's episode, we're diving deep into the world of collections within community associations. We're going to cover everything from the roles of the board and property managers to different types of delinquencies and enforcement measures. So let's jump right in. First off, let's talk about the roles of the board and property manager in collections. So we obviously know that the board is responsible for setting policies and procedures related to collections, including establishing assessment rates, enforcing payment deadlines, and initiating collection actions when necessary. On the other hand, you have your property manager, who plays a crucial role in implementing the board's directives, communicating with delinquent owners, and coordinating with legal counsel if legal action is required. Kevin, why are these roles so important, and how can board members and property managers make sure to work together when it comes to collections?
Sure. So it all starts from the beginning. So with the budget planning is really the most important aspect, getting that annual assessment right. You know, keep in mind that a budget is just an estimate, though, and that's what your initial assessment's going to be. So if you have unforeseen issues pop up, you're going to run into an additional or special assessment potentially. But that's really what the role of the board is to make sure that that gets started off right. Once you have your plan in place, though, you have to make sure that it's executed, and that's really where the property manager is going to come into play. And so when you're having your board meetings, making sure you go through that board packet, get the board report, understanding how many delinquencies that you have, not letting them slide too long, because that can start impact what you can do in executing on that plan you came up with a year. It can start impacting on whether or not you get financing in your community, along with a whole host of other things. So it's important to make sure that everybody's working in conjunction to execute on that plan. And once the property manager has a collection policy in place that they're executing on, turning over those collections to the attorney to make sure that the appropriate process is followed there.
So you mentioned collections policies. Are those just things that the board should be looking at implementing? Should the property manager make suggestions? What would we tell a community association that doesn't have one in place on how to go about doing that?
So absolutely. Every community is a little bit different. You know, the most common one you're going to see is, you know, some kind of a 30, 60, 90-day plan that, you know, once they get, you know, delinquent 30 days and they're going to get maybe a note from the property manager. If there's still no response, another 30 days, it's going to go over to the attorney and get a letter. And then after that, then the lien stage. And then after that, depending on what jurisdiction you're in, maybe either eviction, foreclosure, that kind of thing, and moving along the process. There are some HOAs, though, that have very low dues. And so, you know, they're okay going a little bit longer if a couple of people don't pay. Mm-hmm. So every community kind of needs to decide what fits that particular community the best. But when you make that decision, you have to treat everybody equally, because where you run into problems is if, you know, you treat one person, you know, they're a day late, and then bam, you know, they're lien foreclosure right through. The person who's best buddies with the board president, you know, and drinks with them in their garage, they get 3 years to pay. So that kind of thing doesn't work. And it's also, you need to make sure, you know, and it's key for the property manager as well as the board members to be in tune to this, to make sure you're collecting enough money to operate your community. Because in some communities, especially smaller ones, if you get a few people not paying, it has a significant impact on whether you can pay the landscape or put in the new roof that you plan for, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's definitely something to keep in mind. You know, as a former property manager, one of the crazy things that we always dealt with was, when is it proper to go after a co-owner? My suggestion would always be, what does your collections policy say? A lot of them would say, oh, we don't have one. So it's always key to have a type of collection policy in place so that you know when that 30, 60, 90 days hit, what to do at that instance. Otherwise, you'll be, you know, accused of sending someone to collections 5 days after it happens, or 10 days because you're having drinks with them in the garage. So definitely, to keep things consistent, it's always important to have a collections policy in place. So when it comes to navigating the world of collections, knowing what to look out for in governing documents is also key. What are some crucial aspects to consider when reviewing those governing documents?
All right, so a few things is, you want to figure out what the remedies are and whether those are spelled out in the documents. Certain statutory schemes, you know, like the Condo Act, for example, there'll be a statutory lien that arises. you may have priority issues and notice issues, and so that statutory lien needs to be recorded. But for example, in Michigan, we don't have an HOA Act, and so you can't put a lien on the property unless it says that in the documents. Other times people will come to me and say, well, we want to issue fines and we want to have those assessed to the account. Well, if the documents don't permit fines and if they don't permit those to be assessed to the account. And so it's really important to take a look at whether everything on the ledger is something that actually is supported in the documents and it wasn't made up necessarily along the way. I also want to take a look at the interest rate. That's always a big thing. You know, some associations allow interest and late fees to be charged, others don't. So that's not something else that you can make up along the way. It's got to be supported somewhere in those documents. You want to make sure that the interest rate is not usurious. If you also decide that you want to charge interest in addition to a late fee, the other big thing that I think is instrumental in why community associations decide to proceed or not is that most state statutes and most documents are going to allow them to recover their attorney's fees and costs that are incurred in a collection process at every step of the stage. And so if you don't have that, a lot of them are hesitant or they will allow large balances to rack up, but then that impacts the overall operations of the community association. So it's really important that you have an attorney fee covering provision in there, especially something that's going to allow the pre-litigation fees incurred in bankruptcy, any of those kinds of things. You want to make sure that it's very expansive so the association isn't having to go out of pocket every time somebody doesn't pay.
So, Kevin, what are the common components of a collections policy?
All right, here's the short list, Reed. You got to have the due date for the assessments and the date that interest or late fees kicks in, if that's permitted under your documents. Time period which the association or management company is going to send a follow-up letter for any missed payments. We have the time period for turning it over to legal counsel. Whether legal counsel is going to send more than one demand letter before they move forward is typically part of the process. Whether assessments are going to be accelerated if permitted by the governing documents. So a lot of them, if you're delinquent, will allow them to collect the assessment for the entire year, so the association doesn't have to worry about getting going after them later on in the same assessment year. Rent diversion is another key thing. So under the Condo Act here in Michigan, you can send a rent diversion letter if there's a tenant, and that tenant would have to pay rent to the association as opposed to the owner who is delinquent on their dues. You want to have an application of payment, certainly outline how it's going to be applied between attorney's fees, costs, late fees, interest, the actual outstanding assessments, which of those goes first. The time period during which a lien will be recorded, so whether that's, you know, going to be a standard 30 days, you know, after you get a rejection or a non-response, or if you're going to have more time to record a lien in there, or the time period which foreclosure will be commenced as well. So those are all important key aspects that you're going to look for and make some decisions as the timing requirements of those. You know, certainly walking through with the attorney, they're going to help make that FDCPA compliant as well too.
So are these all required components, or can a board pick and choose what components they want to include?
Well, the board can pick or choose whether they want to do a good job or a bad job, okay. But I would say if you're going to have a collection policy in place, you're probably going to want to tackle all of those issues. Some of them may already be addressed in the governing documents, depending on how well your bylaws were drafted, but most of them are not going to get quite that granular. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important to make sure that everything moves forward in an orderly process to make sure that the money keeps, you know, flowing in, the association's operations are not disrupted. But also, it just from a fundamental sense of fairness, when everybody's treated equally, mm-hmm. you know, you're not making decisions off the cuff. You can just point to the policy and you know, whether you're the manager in the process, whether you're one of the legal assistants that works here at Herzl Law, whether you're a collection attorney, it doesn't matter who you are, you can point to the process and just say, you know, everybody is treated equally here, so you're not being singled out, and this is the way that it needs to work. So
those are definitely components of a good collections policy, which is what you want to have.
Yes, unless you want to be a bad board.
Yes.
and nobody listening to this wants to be on a bad board.
I would hope not. So you mentioned that there's key differences between condos and HOAs when it comes to liens and foreclosures. So we know that in a condo association, the association will typically have a lien priority on the unit for unpaid assessment, which means that the association can foreclose on the unit if the owner fails to pay. In contrast, the HOA's lien is typically a lower priority, right?
Well, that depends, because when you're dealing with HOAs, you know, I typically like to say that that's the Wild West, and so you know you're going to get your six shooters out there, because it really depends on what's happening in the governing documents and what you're able to do. And so in most cases, most of the HOA documents I see don't necessarily have priority provisions mm-hmm. in them. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac certainly have different requirements that you can't make. There's certain requirements they look for in the governing documents as to whether they're going to loan and whether it would potentially eliminate their priority. So that's certainly something to look at. With respect to condos, typically the way that is going to work is that the first purchase mortgage is going to have priority over everything else, but the condo lien is going to have priority over everything after that. And so, you know, you get into situations where you may have a second mortgage, and so you'll want to take a look at whether the condo lien has priority in that circumstance. Although I'll tell you, it's interesting, we have had cases, because the mortgage documents typically allow a lender to pay off, you know, the HOA dues even if they're lien has priority, and sometimes they've just decided to exercise that and pay off the HOA even if there wasn't priority in that case. So you know, that's something, certainly I wouldn't try and figure out the priorities on your own. Talk to the attorney about that, because every circumstance is going to be a little bit different, depending on when the lien was recorded, what's it for. You know, certainly, you know, whether it's a mechanics lien comes into play, there's tax liens, and sometimes you can get into to tricky issues there. So certainly moving forward, the attorney is going to advise you, you know, if you foreclosed, whether your lien is going to have priority, whether you'd be able to wipe out these other liens, or whether or not it'd be a circumstance, what we used to do back in the olden days in the real estate crisis. We still do it occasionally, is you foreclose, you take subject to the mortgage company's interest, and then you just go ahead and rent it out. Now, if you're in Illinois, you don't need to worry about monkeying around with all that. What you do is you just go straight to eviction. So they do have judicial foreclosure there, but typically, you know, for our Illinois clients, what ends up happening is you evict the owner, and then they just lose possession until it's paid in full, so you just rent it out that way. So priority is going to be a less of a concern when the remedy that you're going after is eviction as opposed to foreclosure.
So it sounds like there's a lot of complex parts when it comes to figuring out collections. A lot of homeowners or a lot of property managers may think that going the route of a debt collections agency would be beneficial in terms of saving money for the association. What are some factors or things to consider before going that route?
So I tell you to carefully take a look at the contract, because, you know, on our end, if it allows for a recovery of attorney's fees and costs, that gets added on to the co-owner's ledger. And typically, if your documents are well drafted, and what we put into our documents is those costs will get paid first before the assessments. So that's certainly something to look for in allowing the recovery of those. With respect to the debt collection agencies, over the years, we've had, I guess, several clients come to us where they've had the same letter sent over and over again for 2 years. And then while they purport to charge a contingency fee, what ends up happening is there's very stiff penalties if you leave. And then each of those letters gets charged a very high or expensive rate. And then there's a lot of back and forth after not seeing results for several years. So if you're going to take a look at a debt collection agency, I'd certainly take a look at the fine print, the collection, I guess, remedies that they can pursue, it, because they can't necessarily do all the same things as a lawyer as mm-hmm. well. And so, you know, at some point, you know, sending letters works, but after that, that doesn't work with everybody. And so we certainly try our best to get everything resolved before there's a lawsuit or a foreclosure or an eviction. And a lot of the cases that we have get resolved before then, but some of them don't. And you need to be able to make sure that whoever you're handling this can carry, you know, this the distance all the way until the very end. You know, on our end, I think actually for the recovery of the attorney's fees too, you know, we have an extremely high rate. You know, I think we recover them 97-98% of the time, somewhere in that neighborhood. And so what we do for clients that are on our premium service plan is we guarantee the collection of the recovery of the attorney's fees. And if we do not recover them, for the clients that are on the plan, we'll give you a refund for whatever attorney's fees and costs that we don't recover. That's how confident we are in our ability to collect.
So collections can obviously result in various ways, from someone not paying their dues to having issues with maintenance, things of that nature. What happens when someone decides, a co-owner decides that they're not going to pay dues or they're going to withhold payment until an action is completed, such as a work order gets done or they see a specific result happening?
That co-owner is not going to like the result. So there's pretty clear case law and what the statutes say in both the jurisdictions that we practice in, is that that is not a defense to the payment of assessments. And so just because you are upset with the way the association is handling something, somebody's grass is 7 inches tall instead of 6 inches tall, you don't like the way the board president looked at you, they maybe forgot to paint the clubhouse this year or something, and it's got a little bit of peeling paint. None of those are going to be defenses. What the law says is that you have to pay your assessments. And then if you have a separate cause of action, you need to handle that separately and go after that. But you can't use that as a defense to the non-payment of assessments. Really, the only exception to that is if the board did not follow the appropriate procedure in imposing the assessment. So if there was never any kind of vote, board meeting minutes, record, or anything, you know, of adopting assessments or certain types of assessments or special assessments will require a co-owner vote. And so if you're not following a procedure, you know, that may potentially be a defense. But I can tell you, actually, it was interesting. One of the craziest cases I was ever involved in did require the owners to vote on the annual assessment. And I know this is going to be shocking, but they were not able to get enough people to have quorum in their association.
Oh, gosh.
And so what happens if you can't get, if the annual assessment requires an owner vote and you can't get enough people to have the vote? Is the assessment zero? Well, I can tell you the bills weren't zero. So certainly the way this was drafted, I mean, the board could have imposed an additional assessment mm-hmm. without an owner vote. But you want to make sure that your documents, you know, give the board the flexibility to actually go ahead and impose that assessment as well.
So definitely being aware and knowledgeable of what the governing documents say is first and foremost very important. So ultimately, delinquency is going to happen, collections is going to occur. So what resources or support would we tell co-owners and board members to kind of keep in mind if they're experiencing financial hardships or struggling to pay those assessments?
So certainly with respect to that, you know, most associations, they'll work out a
yep.
payment plan. And so the point of this is not to be draconian. It's not to kick people out of their houses, you know, and put them in a hard spot. But similar to the co-owner that may have bills to pay and they may have to pay somebody else, you know, the association's bills don't go away. Mm-hmm. And what ultimately ends up happening, if one co-owner doesn't pay and bills got to get paid, then there's going to be an additional assessment and everybody else has to pay for that. So what I find is most associations, you know, they are flexible as long as there's a reasonable payment plan. It gets repaid in a reasonable amount of time. It will take them out of the collection process as long as there's still, you know, the lien on the property that secures that until the payment plan is completed, till that, you know, is seen through. I'd say most cases that we see are worked out that mm-hmm. way. And I typically find it is better if there's an interactive process, you know, if you get to the point where you get the owner to make an offer and then you take that offer to the board and then the board can make a decision as to how to handle that. It does get a little bit tricky when you start, you know, thinking about waiving things like assessments and stuff like that. Some jurisdictions don't permit that. But then every time the board makes that type of decision, what they're really doing is just increasing the cost on everybody else that's already paid, because those same bills exist, they still got to get paid. And so, you know, typically there may be a little bit of flexibility on things like late fees and interest, but the rest of it, you know, is going to have to get paid as part of that payment plan. And even if it's not as quickly as the board wanted, you know, it'll keep that person in their house. They will get the money faster than if we have to keep going through this process as well. And so I would say the vast majority of cases are typically worked out that way. But there are, you know, certain cases where people just, they don't have the means. It doesn't matter what kind of payment plan they're on, or they just flat out refuse to pay because mm-hmm. they're upset with
yes.
the way the association is operating, personality conflict, whatever the reason. And they go into this and they're going to show the association who's boss. And then once they have a lot of legal fees tacked on there, they regret that decision. But, you know, that's typically the way it works.
So, Kevin, if you're looking to get a community association loan, does collections have an impact on that at all?
Heck yes! So I'll tell you, if you are in a community where assessments have probably been too low, you don't have great reserves, you can go out and get a community association loan to do some of these major repairs and projects, and that's a good way as opposed to necessarily putting a whole bunch of co-owners into delinquency, having huge assessments. But they are going to take a look at what your delinquency rate is in your community. And so typically what they want to see is that they have less than 10%, typically, you know, depending on the underwriting, it could be as low as 5, but they want to be in that 5 to 10, no more and higher than that 5 to 10% range of owners that are 60 days delinquent. Mm-hmm. So if you don't have a collection policy in place and you let things slide and you get too many delinquencies and the percentage of delinquencies increases, you're also probably going to foreclose your ability to get that loan until you get your delinquencies under control.
So Herzl's Handbook, I think there's a chapter on collections in there, right?
Yes, chapter 5.
Nice.
So if you do decide that you want to pick up a copy of this, it's on Amazon.com. But this is one of the main components that we do tackle in there, how the process typically works. We walk you all the way through it, and you'll get all the highlights that you need, along with a few other things that we haven't addressed on this podcast.
So we're definitely there to lend a hand and walk you through that process. That wraps up today's episode of Herzl's Condo Chronicles. We've covered a lot of ground here regarding collections within community associations, from the roles of the board and property manager to different types of delinquencies and enforcement measures. Remember, effective collections management is crucial for maintaining the financial health and stability of your community association. Thanks for tuning in.
Each month, step into the world of legal enlightenment with Herzl's Condo Chronicles, the podcast brought to you by Herzl Law. Join us as we explore the ins and outs of the legal landscape, share intriguing case studies, and dive into the heart of legal matters affecting your community association. Plus, don't miss out on the monthly legal news updates with Herzl's Monthly Roundup, where we serve up the latest legal insights hot off the press. Get ready for a journey where law meets life and wisdom meets the everyday. The information on this podcast is intended for informational purposes only. This podcast is not intended to provide legal advice. The purpose of this podcast is to provide general education and information. This podcast may not reflect the most recent legal developments or future changes in the law. Herzl Law disclaims all liability in respect to actions taken or not taken based on any or all the content of this podcast, including the accuracy of any content to the fullest extent permitted by law. No business or client relationship is established by listening to this podcast. Any cases, law, or other scenarios discussed during this podcast are unique to that specific situation and are not indicative of a specific outcome in any other legal matters.